Author Nick Stone will be at Fulton High this Friday evening at 7 p.m. in the Fulton Auditorium. It's a free public discussion of her new and really interesting book called Dear Martin. Nick, thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It must be interesting to spend all the time it takes to write a book alone. I assume you're writing this in solitude and peace, I hope. And then you come out.
No, actually.
No?
I'm like not that writer. No, I totally write like in cafes. I like the noise.
Really? Like, do you write in the same cafe? Do you have a lucky cafe?
I do. There's a Starbucks here in Atlanta, and I have written three or four books there, and all have sold to publishers. I think three of them have been published already. It's exciting, like having your spot. So I think Odd One Out is the first book I wrote in this Starbucks, and then everyone that's come since. So Jackpot, which comes out in October, I have a middle grade novel coming out in January, and then the sequel to Dear Martin comes out next October, and all four of those books were written in this one Starbucks.
Do you ever have people that come up to you in the Starbucks and say, hey, what are you working on, or do people leave you alone?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. It's definitely a place where when I walk in, if there's somebody sitting where I typically sit, they will literally get up and move without me asking. So I think that it's clear that like I come in and I work in the same spot. So rarely I will have a person ask what I'm working on, but I'm there, you know, six, seven hours. So there's time for conversation.
Wow, that's incredible. Why is it so much more effective to write where it's loud and noisy and, you know, people spilling things?
I am very atypical in the sense that I am extremely extroverted. Like most authors you interact with are super introverted, prefer to be alone. They run out of social energy pretty quickly, but I am literally the opposite. There's something that fuels my writing there's something about being around that many people moving and interacting and buying their coffee and going about their day. There's something about that that just makes the writing easier for me. And I think because at the root of all of my work is this desire to explore humanity and like what it means to be human.
Well, this is really interesting too, because you're coming to talk at a high school. I assume there'll be a lot of people there. So, for some writers, I think that would make them go into the fetal position. But for you, it sounds like a really exciting thing to do.
Yeah, it's my favorite part. I visit quite a few high schools. I think last year I visited 80.
Wow.
Over the course of like spring semester and then fall semester. It makes me really happy and I get very excited having the opportunity to actually talk to the people who are reading my books. And I think that also comes from like growing up and reading books by people who frankly just weren't alive. So having a chance to actually talk to readers about what I did and didn't intend in the work is a really cool thing. It's fun.
Do you ever get really surprised by some of the questions you get asked, or, you know, do you get asked a lot of the same things over and over at these public events?
Yeah, it is a lot of the same stuff over and over.
Are you surprised by the people that like your book? You know, do you ever find like a person you would think, oh, this person probably won't like this book, and then it maybe makes a profound change or opens them up in a way that maybe they didn't expect?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, a few weeks ago, I was invited to a book festival in the Netherlands, and I wound up signing books for 2 hours, which blew my mind. You know, like I'm very specific in my fiction. I'm definitely writing fiction aimed at African-American kids, like African-American middle schoolers, high schoolers, but I'm writing the books that I wish I'd had when I was in middle and high school. So when I go to even another country and I have these Dutch girls coming up to me, these are, you know, most of the people at this festival, most of the attendees were females between like 18 and 24. So to have these like college age Dutch girls coming up to me at the table and gushing about how much they love my work, like that was really surprising. But I think it does say a lot about the power of specificity in fiction. Like when you are telling a person's story, the specifics of like an individual story, I really think that gives an opportunity for us to connect with each other on like just the human level, because like each of us exists in very specific ways. And I think that specificity is really what makes the work honestly understandable by a lot more people, as odd as that sounds.
Well, one of the things I found very interesting in doing my research is that your books have been translated into Portuguese, German, Indonesian, Turkish. It's really kind of an interesting mix. And one way I'm surprised, and another way I'm not. I used to live in Indonesia I was there for a year. And one of the things I found that the young people like to ask me about was race relations in the United States. It was something that, because of books and film and history, the young people were very interested in what had happened there? What's going on there in terms of race, and why are you having these incredible problems? Are you finding the same things?
I am, and you know what? I find that fascinating. It really goes to show you just how far kind of the American reach is. I will say I do wish we were more cognizant of some of the stuff we put into fiction and that we put into film specifically. Because that reach is so broad and we are having such an impact on the world at large. But yeah, it is, and it's wild. Like, I remember I lived in Israel for a few years and interacting with people there and hearing kind of their perspectives on American culture and hearing the questions they had were similar to the ones that you were hearing in Indonesia. And it's just, like, it goes to show, like, how much smaller the world is than we realize.
Yeah, well, it was really fascinating, too, because when I was in Indonesia, sometimes I would say, I'm from the United States. And the next couple of questions would often be about jazz music, Boys in the Hood. You know, a lot of these things from African-American culture that have made such a profound impact. And I think that's also part of it as well.
Yeah. I think it will never cease to amaze me, though, I think, the reach that African American culture has achieved. And it's such a fascinating thing if you think about it, because, like, I do wonder and kind of want to look into a bit more why that is, what it is that people are able to connect with that comes from African American culture.
I mean, if I had to make like a really simple theory, I would just say because the output is so incredible. You know, I mean, if you look at it, I mean, just in the United States, the contributions of Black Americans to the arts, to literature, to culture, to so many fields is just incredible. And I think people around the world can recognize it maybe without having all of the, some of the tension that we have here in the United States about these things. They just appreciate it for being what it is.
Yeah, I like that, Todd. Thank you. That's actually that's a good theory.
Well, you become part of it.
Which is very strange. I don't know that I'll ever get used to that. It was bizarre being in this other country and having people who were excited to see me, people who spoke a different language, who lived very different lives. We did this canal tour. There was like a select group of readers who opted in to do this boat tour where the authors at the festival, we got on this boat and we rode through the canals in Utrecht because the festival was held in Utrecht. And seeing their excitement at meeting me, it was just like, really? Like, there's this, I don't know what it is about. It just surprises me. And I think it will continue to surprise me, which maybe isn't a bad thing.
Indeed. Now, you'll be talking a lot about your book, Dear Martin. I'm sure that, you know, as you were writing this, you developed relationships with the characters and the time and the place. Has your own relationship to your book, Dear Martin, changed over time?
A little bit. I definitely, the further I get from publication, the more I talk to people, the more I see things I would have done differently if I could go back and do it again. That's one of the main things that's changed in my relationship to the book. Originally, I wrote it as a book for my two sons. I have two little boys. One is, I have a rising second grader, and I have a son who will turn 3 next week. And I wrote it for them because I wanted to get a better understanding of kind of the world that they will grow up in, that they are currently growing up in, especially in regard to how people view the teenage boys that they will become. So seeing it take off the way that it did, and interacting with people around the country, and even, like I just said, around the globe, who are reading it and interacting with it and, you know, talking about it in the classroom, and they're taking the dialogue scenes in the classroom in the book, and they're actually reading them aloud in like a play format in their classrooms. Like, interacting with people who are interacting with the book in that way has definitely changed the way that I see the book and the way that I see what the book is capable of doing and the kind of connections that it's been able to create between people from different backgrounds. That being said, I did end up writing a sequel because so many people wanted one. And I also, as I traveled and talked to people, I saw an opportunity to present kind of a different side of the story. So the sequel follows a different character from Dear Martin. The young man in Dear Martin named Quan, who at the close of Dear Martin, he is incarcerated. He's in jail awaiting trial on murder charges. And his life has been very different from the main character of Dear Martin, who is the main character of Dear Martin is very high achieving. He's got like a good head on his shoulders, as adults would say. And he's kind of headed in a path that many people would celebrate. So seeing how people responded to him, I decided to go ahead and take the opportunity to tell the story of a boy who is not on that path, but who is still worthy of our respect and compassion, and who still has a really important story that I think will give insight into a lot of stories that just aren't being told, or stories that are overlooked. Boys whose lives are fraught, who experience a lot of trauma very young, and so they wind up on a very different path than the one that Justice wound up on. But as I interacted with people about Dear Martin, I really did see the need for this other book. So we'll see how it goes. Like, I'm interested to see how the people who really latched on to Dear Martin will take to this new work, and it'll come out in October 2020.
Yeah, I'm thinking back, you know, just to my own high school years, and you know, books like yours were either not around, or if they were around, I didn't see them, and they certainly weren't in my school. And I kind of wonder how my consciousness would have developed being exposed to, I guess, what people, a lot of people that review your books call the quality of keeping it real.
I love that.
And yeah, I just kind of wonder for my own self how my own consciousness would have developed in high school with more books like yours.
Honestly, so do I, because I didn't have them either, right? So it took me being, I think the first time I really read a book and was able to relate to it on a personal level, like with that had a person in it who looked like me. I was in my mid-20s, my late 20s. I think I was like 26 or 27. So I do wonder what it would have been like to have books like the ones I'm writing now back when I was like kind of developing, and, you know, my worldview was developing, and my way of moving through the world was developing. Like, I also wonder what it would have been like. I'm just glad that kids have it now, because I do get a lot of responses from kids, especially ones who don't like to read or who think that they don't like to read. I get a lot of messages that basically say, like, I don't like reading, but this book, I read your book. It's the first book I've ever read, and now I want to read more. And I think I kind of wonder how literacy rates when we were coming up, for instance, would have been affected by having books that reflected kind of the diversity of the world that we lived in. But yeah, like I said, glad they exist now.
On that note, I would like to thank you, Nick Stone, for taking the time for Keeping It Real here with us at WUOT.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Nick Stone will be at Fulton High School this Friday at 7 p.m. The doors open at 6:30. I'm just imagining that it would be a good idea to get there early. It's a free event, and it's at the Fulton Auditorium. That's over there on Broadway here in Knoxville. Nick Stone, thanks again.
Yeah, can't wait.